This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Daryl Ong, and you're tuned in to the show that's all about the people and places of our capital city. What is the official language of Malaysia? Yes, it's BM, but it's also food. Food bypasses the language and cultural barriers of people, giving us a sense of unity, uniting us different individuals from all walks of life. Now, when it comes to food or the Malaysian food community, we can easily categorize them into two categories: people who love to eat and people who love to cook. Makan Sharing, a relatively new startup, has been attempting to start this innovative food culture, almost like a food revolution, bringing together these two categories for a truly unique culinary experience. Here's Ofnil Ting speaking to one of Makan Sharing's co-founder, Malini Munusami.
Food is aplenty in Malaysia. You know, 24/7, we have, you know, lots of places where we can go and get, you know, a meal. And lots of places basically where we can go and, you know, grab different types of food. But in terms of challenges, I think it's about bringing more personalized home cook experiences, bringing out more cooks with passion into cooking rather than the commercial stuff.
So what spurred you to start your company, Makan Sharing?
So together with my co-founder, Nesan, who is actually my younger brother, what we found was that, you know, there's plenty of food around in Malaysia. What we feel is that there seems to be a lack of opportunities in terms of being able to sample or being able to enjoy the experiences which are given, which are provided by home cooks, young professionals, people who truly love to cook, people with a passion to cook. So that is basically, you know, the idea behind Makan Sharing. So we call Makan Sharing as an online food lovers marketplace. So what we want to do is basically we want to connect together foodies, those who love to eat, together with cooks. Basically, cooks can be home cooks, they can be young professionals, you know, anyone with a passion to cook, anyone who enjoys cooking and sharing with others.
So how does Makan Sharing work?
Okay, so in Makan Sharing, we have, at the moment, we have two categories of people, basically, who are food lovers. One whom we call foodies. So foodies are basically those who enjoy to eat and who enjoy seeking new culinary experiences. And then we have cooks, and as I said just now. And what Makan Sharing actually does is that we call ourselves a marketplace and we connect foodies with cooks. So we invite all cooks, you know, from different backgrounds basically to register as a cook on our platform. And using our platform, they will be able to publish their menus. They will be able to publish what we refer to as their cook events. So a cook event is basically a dining event with a particular menu at a particular time, you know, which will be prepared by that particular cook. And once they put up these events online, foodies can basically peruse the menu, they can look at the details, they can see what is being offered, and then they proceed basically to make reservations for that particular event. So we connect foodies with cooks. At the same time, we also have services basically for foodies, where foodies can actually come to us and request for a private cook event basically to be held, whether they want a particular the services from a particular cook, or they would like to ask us to help them to get a dining host, to get a cook, you know, for that number of people.
How was the reception for previous events?
So far, we've had quite a number of events. And so out of that, you know, we have had events who are actually sold out. We actually had events that actually catered up to 30 people that was actually sold out. So, you know, the reception towards the cook was actually very good. One of our sold out events that was held about a couple of weeks ago, the chef prepared basically a combination of Indian and Northern Malaysian type of dishes that she was very familiar with. It was a completely sold out event. We had an interesting crowd as well. So we had a crowd basically comprising of locals and foreigners as well. And, you know, it was actually very interesting. And she basically what she offered was that she had everything going from, you know, crab sparatel right down to prawns fried with five spice powder to bubur kacang to, oh gosh, I mean, there were 10 dishes, 10 different types of things that were offered in her menu. And it was actually very interesting because one of the foreigners who actually, or rather one of the expats basically, you know, he was saying, oh my God, this is just like my home cooking. It just reminds me of home. So that was actually very delightful to hear, in a sense that, you know, this is exactly what we want to bring to foodies. You know, meals basically that remind them of home cooking, you know, that, you know, where you can actually feel the cook's passion of cooking through the food. Mm.
Is there a minimum number of foodies required for an eating event?
We empower the cooks and we leave it to the cooks basically to decide on what they would like to have, you know, for their cook event. So they basically would suggest the event to us, and then they determine the number, the minimum number of foodies they would like to cook for, or the maximum number. And the maximum number is also basically limited by the capacity of the dining host.
What about the legal aspects of this business in terms of like restaurant licenses?
Okay, so in terms of legal aspects, Makan Sharing itself, basically in terms of licensing as a company, we have in our charter basically license basically to operate in terms of events as well as catering.
So the chefs and the foodies are all covered by that?
Correct.
So foodies need to sign up beforehand. So it's not possible for foodies to be walk-in customers?
No, it's not possible because we are not a restaurant. And we also have to think about the cooks. So cooks basically, you know, they need time to prepare for the menu. So you can't just basically walk up 1 hour before and say, please cook me a crab meal, you know, with, you know, different mutton and everything else. Basically, so they need at least sometimes, you know, at least one or two days in advance. So foodies basically need to register as a foodie on our platform, and then they can proceed to make reservations because the cook basically needs at once notice to prepare for the meals. Mm.
Let's say I'm a foodie right now, or I want to be a foodie. So mm-hmm. can you walk us through the process of being a foodie, like from going to the website to registering and then receiving updates, those kind of stuff?
Okay, so it's actually very easy. We try to make it as simple as possible on our website. So if you just go to www.makansharing.com, you will see click here to register as a foodie and click here to register as a cook. So you click on the link basically that says click here to register as a foodie. You just enter some information. We require some information basically in terms of your contact details. And once you are registered as a foodie, you will automatically be registered as a foodie. So once you're registered as a foodie, you'll be able to register for any dining event. All dining events are published on our website. So it is open to all for them to view. But except that if you want to actually proceed to register for an event and make payment, then you have to be registered as a foodie. Mm.
So how about registering as a chef? I mean, what was the criteria to be able to qualify as a chef? Is there auditions? Is there food tasting?
Yes, okay. So if you would like to be a cook on Makan Sharing, again, we like to make it as simple as possible. So once you clicked on register as a cook, what happens is that the Makan Sharing team will basically contact the person and talk to them, find out their background, get some details, you know, about them, you know, in terms of their culinary experience and all that. And, you know, and depends on basically how, you know, the conversation goes. We may ask for a food testing. And once, you know, we are happy, the person will basically be enabled as a cook on our platform.
Previously, you mentioned there are two categories, which is the foodie and the chef.
That is correct.
But I understand that now that's in the works for a third category, which is the dining host.
That is correct.
Can you explain more about that?
Okay, so in order basically to be more accessible and scalable across to, you know, different cities and to cater for different cultures, you know, and different backgrounds as well, Makan Sharing basically has come up with the idea of a dining host. A dining host, very simply, is anyone who is willing to host a dining event, whether it is an underutilized restaurant, whether it is, you know, a hall at a clubhouse, or it can even be a foodie basically who's willing to open up to his or her home to fellow foodies and to host the event. Mm.
So what's the criteria to become a dining host?
So basically, what we look for, generally speaking, is that a dining host must be able to provide all the facilities and to host the event in terms of making the dining event for the particular cook and foodies comfortable. So they need to be able to provide all the facilities in terms of, you know, whatever that it takes, basically, in order to host a dining event. Mm.
So based on the website, I could see that there are a few chefs that you have posted on the website with like different specialties, like
correct,
like different cuisine, like Chinese, mm-hmm, yeah, Malay. So right, like, I was wondering how many different kinds of cuisines do you all have right now currently?
Okay, so far what you see on the website and what we actually have in the pipeline, we also have a number of cooks are in the pipeline. And so we have about maybe 4 to 5 different types of cuisines that are available, ranging from, as you said, Chinese, Indian, we have Malay, we also have Penang based, we also have something combining basically, Indian and, you know, northern type of dishes in Malaysia. We also have Western, and in the pipeline, we also have, you know, someone who will be coming in basically with European type of dishes as well.
Besides connecting chefs, foodies and mm-hmm. dining hosts, what other services do you all provide, like private events?
Yes. As I said earlier, Makan Sharing is what we like to term it as an online food lovers marketplace. So in this marketplace, we provide services not just to cooks, not just to enable or empower cooks, but basically now that we have a pool of cooks, foodies can also come to us and say that, you know, if they've tried, for example, like this Indian menu, they say, oh, you know, I truly love her mutton. Would you be able to connect her to me and ask her to cook for us, you know, to have, you know, to help us to host an event or a birthday party? Foodies can also come to us and say that, would you able help us to be able to find a dining host, you know, and I would like to have this particular cuisine. Can you find a cook, basically, to be able to, you know, to cook this particular type of food for us? So we provide services to foodies as well in terms of helping them to facilitate whatever culinary events that you would like, whether it's a private event, whether it's a birthday party.
So it's a big foodie community, lah.
Yes, that's correct. That is basically what we would like to build, a food lovers community.
Besides the dining host plans, do you have any other expansion plans, new services?
Yes, we do. We in the pipeline, basically, we are actually looking at takeaway home meals as well. What happens is that, you know, sometimes when we talk to foodies and cooks, is, you know, the foodie will tell us that, oh, you know, the food really looks good. I would really like to have this meal, but I can't make it for that particular time and place, you know. Do you think you can actually organize a tapau for me? And from this, basically, this is where the idea came from. Because there are a lot of people who are working out there, I mean, obviously, and who basically, due to work commitments, are not able to prepare home-cooked meals basically for themselves and their families. At the same time, you have this whole group of people who enjoy cooking at home and, you know, who wouldn't mind preparing basically a slightly bigger portion, you know. So if, let's just say, like, I just give an example. If my mom is basically preparing a home-cooked chicken rice for herself and the family, just adding on a portion for three, four more people is not much of an effort for her. So that actually can be actually a takeaway home meal for somebody else.
Tapau sharing.
Correct. That's right. Yes, that's right. So, so in the pipeline, yes, we are looking towards, you know, expanding our services in terms of home takeaway meals. And again, our focus is basically looking at enabling home cooks, even young professionals, you know, young professional chefs, basically, who are just starting out, you know, and amateur chefs, basically, and giving them basically the opportunity to share their cooking and their passion with others.
That was Malini Munusami, the co-founder of Makan Sharing. To find out more about this initiative, just head over to www.makansharing.com. Coming up in the show, we have a story on Gundam.
A lot of guys and a lot of family don't know that Malaysia is the world champion. Only a certain part of individual. Who knows?
Keep it here. This is I Love KL, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Darong, and you're tuned in to the show that's all about the people and places of our capital city. It all began in Japan in 1979 with the introduction of the anime series Mobile Suit Gundam. Following the anime's cancellation in 1980 came the introduction of robot kits named Gunpla, which is a combination of the words Gundam and plastic. Gunplas are model kits that depict the vehicles and characters of the fictional Gundam universe. Robot kits that eventually kicked off a whole subculture of its own, proving its sustainable popularity even to today. Despite the long-lasting popularity of Gundam models here, there hasn't been much avenues for Malaysian diehards to meet up and unite, but that all changed with the very first Malaysian Gundam Art Festival that took place recently. We caught up with Nuzul Amin, Muhammad Aizad and Chris Lee, organizers of the event, to find out more about the event and the Gundam community here in Malaysia.
Gundam is started at 1979 in animation park. They started TV series, and starting from there, it's a very long history lah. After that, their franchise evolved into Model Kit, which is until today, which is what we see on the market.
There's three main grade. Is one is HG, meaning high grade, MG, master grade, and PG, is perfect grade. So depend on the model. HG is the cheapest one. The cheapest one you can get around 60 or 70 like that.
Basically, you have to follow the manual that is inside the box. There's a part of plastic that we call runner, and in the runner, there's every parts of the Gundam. So if you follow the manual, there will be instruction telling you that from runner, let's say runner A, they will be using A1. So you need to cut out the A1 and then combine with A2, then so on until you complete the parts. Depends on the skills. Normally for HG, around 1 hour, 2 hour, you can finish it. But then for PG or MG, you will take about 2-3 days to 2 weeks or 1 month, depend on your skills and your time.
In the pursuit for perfection, Gunpla fans are so serious about the craft that they employ certain special tools when building to ensure a perfect Gundam model.
There's a basic tool, so because I'm more to building, so basic tool is cutters, sanding tools, hobby knife, which is quite in the beginning when you want to build and you're just a newcomer. This is the few basic tools.
Normally, if you more to intermediate level, you will begin to, you want to paint your kits and you want to customize it, then there will be a different tools, which in this case you need a brush, paints, and some reading regarding the basics on building the Gundam, and as well basic on painting and customizing the Gundam as well. Firstly, you need to cut each part leather, then you will need to sand it. After you sand, then you need to wash or to remove all the excess dust or debris. Later, then you need to prime. Priming is when you change the color, the basic color of the Gundam to more one tone, which is in this case white or gray. Later, then you will be spray what your color of your choice, any color up to you. Then there will be a final coat that we call it top coat, and depend on the finish whether you want to make it matte or glossy.
One might group Gunplus along with other toys meant for kids, but Chris explains that this really isn't the case.
Basically, I wouldn't say that it's not for kids also. It's just that when people say it's toys, it's been treated that the value is different already. And people treat it as a toys, they buy it, they play it. But in Gundam or Gunpla culture, is we look it more into art. Because Gunpla is also can test our patience, it will test our skill, it will test our observation. And for my case, I started with a very small room, which is I rented above my office. Just want to get back my hobby that had been lost for some time. But throughout there, I meet my business partner, Mr. Nuzul. From Mr. Nuzul, he meet another business partner, which is Mr. Aizad there. So it's also broaden up your circle in a sense of people having a same hobby around you. It create conversation, it create friendship, and it create relationship. Even though that's how we come up with MGAF from there also. That's why in this MGAF, we look at it as art. Gunpla is art.
Being the very first of its kind, the Malaysian Gundam Art Festival successfully drew in hordes of fans and even managed to snag up a record in the Malaysian Book of Records.
Initially, the idea is we want to do something recognizable, something appreciation for the community, for the culture, and a platform for people to really come to show what they have, what they love, without having a stress of competition without having the mentality that I come here, you have to compete with someone. We turn that mentality when they come with joy, they come to learn, and they come to meet new friends, and they come to really embrace the hobby culture. And also like unity, because our tagline, a unity art, hobby art event by the people and fans. That is the tagline of it.
The total number of Gundam were displayed in the event is 1,916. That's a lot of Gundam to display in one event. But actually the book of record, in Malaysia book of record, they gave us a total number of 1,100. So we exceed the amount, the expectation that the Malaysia Book of Record said. So we kind of proud of it, and then we believe the Malaysian Gundam scene is more alive.
Individually, you cannot achieve that record. You don't have 1,900 kids at your home. In that sense, we want to make it as a whole, as a community event. Then people can come and set up their kids, and we can achieve that record as a community, not as an individual. We target it as a unity event. In that event, there's a group from Kuantan, Johor, Sarawak, Seremban, Terengganu, Pulau Pinang. Normally, we only see or interact with them in the Facebook, but then when you face-to-face with them, then you will make new friends and all the stuff.
An event of this scale is sure to be incomplete without a few hiccups and challenges here and there.
To me, the challenges is how to keep others, people's Gunpla in a very safe environment. So right now, because we are in the tight budget and there will be no chef or anything, just a table, they will be putting the caution line. So to achieve that, I personally want to thank our crew, because without them, it's very hard for us to maintain the security and the order of the event, because since the Gunpla is very fragile, and once you knock one down, and everything will be domino effect. So it's quite hard to actually to stop the visitor from touching the kids.
Oh yeah,
that's why the security is the main issue. But then thank God, nothing wrong, nothing fall down, nothing missing, except for some skirt.
There's one small part. So far safe, no stealing case, no?
Yeah, no stealing.
In the beginning, we not say want to integrate the cosplay event, but when that building owner, USJ19, say, hey, I need some cosplayer to bring out the crowd. So now that only left less than 30 days to find cosplayer. So after that, we go to talk to find suitable people to talk to a cosplayer, because for our community that been Gunpla spraying building, for us to approach cosplay community is very difficult.
Different field.
It's different field. So from there is a challenge also to go find key people. From there, we talked to also Mr. Sean Lopez. He's the MC for the event. He gives some advice. And then Mr. John, he is a prop maker. He very good in a sense of making costume or cosplay for a character. So from there, he draw more cosplayer to come to the competition. We give out some prize money. So that event able to pull off is because of we find people that can help. We able to pull up because we have to thank a lot of these key people.
With the success of this year's event, I seeked out to find out the 3 years' goals and plans for the near future.
We hope and we really want to break this the record we set up, which is 1,916. Maybe next year we can go a little bit higher, like 2,500. But also, we are hoping if we do this kind of event, we are hoping for other parts, you know, other parts of Malaysian belia side to, you know, really look of in this event and this kind of we recognize this hobby to, you know, bring up the Malaysian name, you know, because lot of guys and a lot of family don't know that Malaysia is the world champion. Only a certain part of individual who knows. And I think for Malaysian Kementerian punya side, for belia, they don't know. So we are hoping if in future this kind of group, this kind of government activity who for belia can chip in and, you know, help to promote this kind of hobby.
So like my friend said, we hope that the government sector, I mean the youth punya ministry will recognize this hobby, and maybe like in Japan we will integrate in for school activity or what. Because right now what I see is mostly from the sekolah swasta or the international school saja yang willing to recognize this kind of stuff and then make it as a formal club in their school. But then our kebangsaan punya school, government school, they don't know. Or we hope that for this kind of event we will open their eyes and make them realize, hey, what this kind of hobby is better than maybe like rumpit or anything.
That was Nuzul Amin Muhammad Aizat and Chris Lee, organizers of the Malaysian Gundam Art Festival. To find out more about the event and about what they're up to, and to get in touch with the local community here in KL, just head over to www.gunplamalaysia.com. Sadly, that's all the time we have on this week's show. If you'd like to revisit the interviews, just head over to www.bfm.my to download the podcast. Also, to get in touch with the show, just tweet us. We are at BFM Radio. My name's Daryl Ong. You have been tuning in to the show that's all about the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week for another exciting episode of I Love KL, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.